Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise? The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
All right, you're welcome along to Thursday's football show. Nathan with you for the next hour. Massive 45 minutes coming up for Arsenal. They need a goal to have any chance of progressing to the Europa League final. 0-0 on the night at halftime against Villarreal at the Emirates. The Spanish side leading 2-1 on aggregate. Whoever comes through that will play Manchester United in the final. United 6-2 up from the first leg ahead of their trip to Roma. 1-0 up at halftime tonight. Edinson Cavani just before the break. So United 7-2 up on aggregate. We'll keep a close eye on those games over the next hour or so. It's a big weekend ahead in the Premier League as well. Manchester City will be crowned champions if they beat Chelsea in that dress rehearsal for the Champions League final on Saturday evening. We've two live games on Sunday. Manchester United will be back in action there at Aston Villa in the 2:05 kickoff. Myself and Brian Kerr will talk you through that one. And then at 4:30, West Ham will look to keep their Champions League hopes alive against an Everton side who are probably out of it at this stage. Stephen Doyle and Vinnie Perth will be on commentary for that. 53106 is the text number. If you're out and about, you can listen in on the app. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the former Dundalk manager, Shane Keegan. Evening, Shane.
Nathan, how are you getting on? Are you well?
I'm all right. How are you?
Not bad now at all. Not bad at all. Starting to get busy again. Thankfully, there's only so many episodes of Ninjago you can watch with your six-year-old.
That term, Dundalk manager, is one that has raised a lot of questions over the last few months. Do you look at yourself as a former Dundalk manager?
No, definitely fair to say I don't look at myself as a former Dundalk manager. Nathan, that's for sure. Look, I think anybody who follows the League of Ireland properly knows that definitely wasn't the case. And I certainly wouldn't be claiming that to have been the case either.
We'll get into, I guess, the details of what's happened over the last 6 months. But just on that side for you personally, because in one way, from the outside, it did feel as though you were living the dream. Like, we're watching Arsenal tonight at the Emirates in a Europa League semi-final, and you were there on the sideline with Dundalk. And you know, you're a former League of Ireland manager, you're a pro licence holder, you're incredibly well educated in football, and then you get to go and experience this. But there's so many questions around it. Did it feel real? Did it feel like you'd control of the situation you were in?
To be fair, Nathan, I'd completely differentiate between this year and last year. Last year, there was an element of living the dream. It was an absolutely fantastic experience. And look, while there still was that box-ticking exercise to a certain extent, nobody was really pushing the agenda that it was actually the manager last year. Yeah, you had to do the interviews and that kind of stuff after the game, but even in doing the interviews, you were openly speaking about, you know, Filippo's team and, you know, Filippo's tactics and all of that kind of thing. And I suppose it's a path that's been well trodden in the League of Ireland. It's a lot of clubs have had to go that route, but they would always have went that way. You know, obviously you had it with John Gill and Vinnie Perth, where you were ticking a box because you had the license, but you were always only ever speaking on behalf of the real manager. So last year was really, really enjoyable. I mean, in a year where, you know, 99% of the country is struggling to get outside their own house, I'm traveling around Europe with a group of some of the best footballers in this country and having an amazing experience. Last year, thoroughly enjoyed it. Again, obviously, I was never the manager. I was an opposition analyst with the team. I was doing bits and bobs, very small bits and bobs on the coaching side of things. But that was my role, and everybody knew that was my role. So last year was fantastically enjoyable. Unfortunately, this year wasn't quite the same gig.
So when did things start to change?
When did things start to change? Well, I suppose they changed straight away when we went back. Before we even went back, I suppose in the off season, there was some changes at the club in terms of personnel. The general manager left his role, and he left a big hole to fill because he had been a huge part of what Dundalk had done in the last few years. And I suppose because I had a bit of a business background from my own day job, I was asked to try and fill that gap to a certain extent. So I did. I jumped in and got my hands dirty with all kinds of stuff that I'd even as a manager, I'd never been involved in before. There's, you know, getting a normal transfer done is difficult enough, Nathan, and I've had a bit of experience on that. But getting transfers done that are international and bringing players in from faraway countries when there's visas and work permits and all of that kind of crack is an extremely difficult process. And that's basically the kind of work I undertook probably.
So at this stage, is your official title still opposition analyst?
My official title, because it kind of had to be, I suppose, from when I went full time. So I suppose to go backwards, to go forwards, Nathan, I went in initially in a part time role under Vinny, obviously, who you know well on the show, and Vinny gave me my chance in there initially. And yeah, that role was very, very much a part-time role, studying opposition games, going to opposition games, and really only given one day a week up in Dundalk. And I continued in pretty much exactly that role initially when Filippo took over as well. It was only when we qualified for the Europa group stages that it became impossible for me to juggle my day job with the Dundalk role. I'd pretty much taken off all of my holidays, my annual leave to go to the qualifying games and to get through the qualifying games. So it became a case when we qualified for the group stages of either quit Dundalk or quit your day job. So at that stage, I spoke to the club, I explained all that to them, and they did offer me a full-time contract. So that's the initial move that I look back and think, oh, was that the wisest move in the world? You know, did I let ambition and that get the better of me at that stage? But yeah, I suppose because of the whole licensing kind of thing, my title from day one on a contract would have been team manager. Because it had to be. There was the public title, and there was the real title, and there was a lot of titles going on, Nathan. So there was. But at the same time, I was kind of happy enough to do whatever the club kind of required me to do within reason. But right. It was only leading up to the start of the season that the within reason changed, you know.
Because there were, obviously, in League of Ireland circles, word travels fast, and there's a lot of rumours, and there's question marks about the people behind the scenes who were leaving and what role you were having to fill in. I guess, in a way, because of the structure of Irish football, and like even with a pro licence, it's very difficult for people to get jobs, that when an opportunity comes up to get another skill set within a club that you can probably use into the future, that while some may see it as a step down to be doing those office roles, actually, in terms of your long-term future, it was probably a decent bit of experience.
Yeah, and look, I suppose, to be honest with you, I was just trying to do what the club needed done at that time. I wouldn't be overly precious about, you know, what I've been asked to do or what title has been put on me. If there's something needs doing and I think I might be capable of doing it, well, then I'll do it. You know, that doesn't really bother me in the slightest. So it doesn't. So no, I was, and as you say, yeah, it does increase your skill set. You know, I am now able to do things football wise, and even things that probably stand to me in my own kind of business side of things. I am able to do things that I certainly wasn't able to do at the beginning of January. That's for sure. And I would look back on that as a positive as well. You know,
to go against that, you could say that Dundalk are a club just played in the Europa League, who have been champions on a regular basis over the last half decade, that it would be a sign that if people are leaving behind the scenes and not being replaced straight away, of a club not being run in a well manner.
Look, I think it was, you know, there was maybe a little bit of you know, having to fill gaps and you know, a little bit all over the place at times. Now, to be fair, there have been people come into roles since then. So there was a little bit of clamoring around, as I say, just to fill gaps. Now, you know, there's probably clamoring around maybe for 2 months or that, but there are at least more hands on deck there now at the moment than there were during that initial period that it was it was very helter-skelter. You know, you had a transfer deadline coming up as well, and all of that kind of stuff. So, look, it was a bit crazy for a while, but as I say, there's probably a little bit more structure to it there now at the minute, all right.
What was your involvement then on the football side pre-season?
Pre-season, I was absolutely flat to the mat in the office, to be honest.
So you weren't on the training ground at all?
Well, the training ground's right beside the office, so it's easy to go up and get a look. But no, I wasn't. I'll be honest with you, no, I wasn't really participating in it just purely because I couldn't get out the door of the office. There was just enough to be done in there. So it was probably the week leading into the first game of the season, first league game of the season, or maybe leading into the President's Cup game, that things started to level out a little bit more, and I managed to get out onto the pitch at that stage. But to be fair, Nathan, I mean, I was never massively involved on the pitch anyway, so it wasn't like I was a missed presence from the pitch or anything, you know.
What was your relationship like with Filippo Giovagnoli?
Yeah, well, I suppose there's two kinds of relationships. There's the personal relationship, and then there's the professional relationship. And he's a charismatic guy. He's a fun guy to be around. Very, very bubbly guy. Loads of personality, to be fair to him. And so from that side of things, on a personal level, it's impossible not to get on with him. He was a guy you could have good old crack with and good conversations. There was a bit of an edge to him, a bit of boldness about him, which I liked, you know. And look, if I could have stayed in the role where I was only ever the opposition analyst, well, then you know your place, and it's you just back up the manager 100% of the time, and it's not your place to question if you think you would do things differently. You just shut your mouth. It's not your place to say it. But when the dynamic changed this season, then it becomes more awkward because. Look, I think any two people are going to have very, very different ideals as to how things should be done. And as I say, in the normal circumstances, you know, the manager is top dog and therefore you just suck it up. And the reality is, again, he was top dog and I did just have to suck it up. But, you know, that dynamic is very, very different than when you're the one walking out in front of the media and trying to justify tactics or substitutions or training schedules or anything like that you actually had little to no say in. So it makes it a difficult relationship then in that sense, you know.
So did you feel, so last season in the Europa League, while you were sort of front and centre, there was an understanding that it was a sort of ticking the box exercise because you had the qualification, he didn't, that there was that awkward press conference a few months back where there was all sorts of confusion as to, they were trying to dig down into what your title as manager meant. Would you be picking the team? Is that, did that cause confusion for you as much as it did for him?
I wouldn't say it caused confusion. No, look, it was, it's hard to go into it. There's probably things that you'd like to say that, I suppose, contractually or whatever you want to look at, that you can't really say. Look, it was a position that I found myself in. You know, I do look back at it and kind of think, right, could I have handled it differently? Could I have seen coming the position I was going to be put in, could I have dealt with that differently? But I found myself in a position that I wasn't happy with. But it's very, very, you know, there was an element of me probably, Nathan, more than an element, there was a large part of me probably that wanted to walk away as soon as that line was put out there. But it was not my
which line, that you were team manager?
Yeah, well, certainly that I was picking the team.
Right.
But it's your full time. It's your full time employment. It's your full time gig. You challenge any person to up and walk away from their full time gig in the middle of a pandemic.
In this country, in football, where there ain't many full time gigs going.
I have a strong enough business and sales and marketing background, you know, but there's plenty of opportunities maybe outside of football, and I don't mind working outside of football as well, but just opportunities full stop are so slim and far between at the moment that I had to weigh up. I had to weigh up where I stood, and I suppose in the back of my head I was hoping things might play out a little bit better, even though in my heart and hearts I knew it just wasn't doable. It just really wasn't workable. But look, I got on with it. I got on with it, and I tried to do everything that the club needed me to do to the best of my ability. While I was there, I did the opposition analysis to the best of my ability. I did the media duties front and centre to the absolute best of my ability. I never ever questioned Filippo publicly or privately to the players. You know, that's all I could do. But look, let's be honest, in the meantime, you're looking around and you're thinking, right, you know, it's possibly time to see what else is out there for you and to maybe get out of a situation that you're uncomfortable with. And it probably took me a couple of weeks longer than I would have hoped to do that. But yeah, that's what happened in the end, I suppose.
So was that press conference the first time you heard you were going to be, you knew you were team manager, but the first you heard that you were going to be picking the team publicly?
It wouldn't have been too far ahead of that, yeah. Right. That's, yeah.
And was it news to Filippo as well?
that's Filippo, that one, but possibly to a certain element, yeah, possibly. I'm not sure, maybe he was a bit more ahead of it.
And was there no way of negotiating with Jim Magilton, with Bill Hultsizer, of, well, if you're putting this out there and I am going to be the one facing the media, you have now told them that I am responsible for picking this team, that actually I'm a vastly experienced coach, I have my pro license, I should have a role. I should have more of a role than opposition analyst. I should be fully involved in this coaching team with a voice around team selection. Or was that just simply not an option?
I suppose there's two things I'd say on that one, Nathan. The first point, and I think the most important point to make on that is, like, I shouldn't be the Dundalk manager. I never wanted to be the Dundalk manager. I never expected to be the Dundalk manager. I'm not qualified to be the Dundalk manager. Just because I have a pro license doesn't mean I should be the Dundalk manager. I have nowhere near... Dundalk are still, to my mind, pretty much the biggest club in this entire country. I mean, somebody with a CV like mine shouldn't be weighing an ass's roar of getting the Dundalk manager job. Like, absolutely not. Like, they should be going for the absolute best of the best that's possibly out there now that they're in a position to find a new manager, and I assume that's what they will do. So, for, you know, that has to be taken into account first. There's no way that I don't have the CV to be the Dundalk manager. Do I back myself as a manager, and am I, you know, do I want to get back in at that level and prove myself again, maybe in the manner that I did at Wexford? 100%. I've had a few ups and a few downs over the last 6, 7, 8 years in it, but I 100% still have complete and utter belief in myself. But I don't have the CV to have been Dundalk to warrant being Dundalk manager. So from that point of view, you know, you're not going to go beating, banging down the door saying, here, why aren't I even made the manager? But on the flip side, yeah, I did certainly push the case that, well, hold on now, there needs to be a bit more, you know, if my name's going to be the one front and center, I'm going to need to have a bit more involvement than I would normally expect to have. And, you know, there was a discussion around that, but look, it didn't transpire that way. Again, to be fair to Filippo, I would say he's got a tremendous level of belief in himself, a tremendous level of self-confidence, and he wants to do things a certain way. And but, you know, there's nobody gonna change his mind on that. And as I said, that is a trait to be admired to a certain extent within him. But obviously, it's a very frustrating trait then from my point of view, that he's, you know, he is so steadfast to his own beliefs, which, as I say, he is entitled to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, it makes it quite difficult, you know.
I think you've been very honest there about, you know, your role and where you could have been in Irish football. But, you know, Dundalk supporters, people outside of Dundalk would look and say, well, Filippo Giovagnoli didn't have the CV to be Dundalk manager, yet got the job as well. Do you think his inexperience at manager level made it more difficult to have those sort of conversations? Because I think back to, I know it's a different scenario completely, when John Gill and Vinnie Perth were there, and Vinnie Perth was obviously doing the pro licence at the time, and he'd been at Dundalk for many years, and John Gill was very experienced. It never seemed as though these sort of issues ever cropped up.
Yeah. Look, I suppose, again, first thing you'd say is, if Filippo's offered a job, you can't blame him for taking the job. So you can't, that's for sure. But yeah, look, of course, you know, there were a lot of things that would have worked against Filippo that aren't necessarily things he could have done a whole lot about. You know, he is obviously, I think, by his own admission, it's the first adult team that he's ever managed. He also obviously is coming into a league that he knows very little about, so he's probably relying on me. I don't know how that reflects on my opposition analysis, but I suppose he's relying on other people for information. So it's, you know, it's very, very tough for him to try and do the job to the standard that's required. As I say, for a club the size of it, and with the expectations around it, that was going to be very, very difficult. And yeah, look, I suppose we're just, you know, he probably would have made the point to me, you know, very early that he has a very, very clear philosophy, and if I'm not able to, if I'm not able to fall in line with his philosophy, then it's going to be difficult to work. And no matter how much you can't force yourself, unfortunately, to believe in a certain way of doing things. And you know, he had a way of doing things, and my natural way of doing things would have been very, very different, I suppose, to his natural way of doing things. So again, that creates problems and issues for, you know, naturally enough.
His style of management, and there were times, you know, where there seemed to be a lot of changes to the team week after week. There were changes to the goalkeeper. There were a lot of substitutions taking place at the one time. It seemed quite often he was behind you in the stand and things were happening and you weren't quite sure. Was that just his style, or was that a bit of inexperience?
Look, it probably is. Again, it's maybe a bit of inexperience. It's maybe, you know, when things are going against you, you maybe press the panic button. I know, you know, I would have been very, very conscious of to try and, you know, when managing teams, to maybe say to those around me, pull me back here when I look like I've hit the red button and the mist has descended and I'm not quite seeing clearly, you know, pull me back. And you know, maybe he, you know, there could have been a little bit more of that. But yeah, look, the inexperience, of course, it you know, it would be difficult to. It would have counted against him maybe a little bit, so it would. But look, at the same time, you know, it's not like he did an awful job, far from it. And as I say, I'm his opposition analyst. I'm you know, I'm feeding into it no matter what I say. I am part of all that as well. So there's no point to, you know, I can't wash my hands of it either at the same time. Nor am I looking for sympathy for the position that I found myself in. I'm the person who put myself into that position, so I am.
You mentioned your role, say, in the office job part of it, and you were dealing with trying to bring players into the club, and there was visas. There was a big turnover of players in the off-season for Dundalk, and a lot of the established players who had a huge amount of league titles between them left the club to Dundalk's great rival. When you have the likes of Sean Gannon and Sean Hoare ending up at Shamrock Rovers, doesn't look good ever, and there's obviously different contractual situations of what Shamrock Rovers are offering to Dundalk, and then you have a lot of players coming in from different leagues all trying to settle at the same time. How difficult was that to be a part of, and to see those players who've been so successful leave and then try and juggle these mix of players and bring them all in?
That definitely would have been a particular frustration of mine, that's for sure. It really is crazy, the players that have been allowed to leave the club. Now, don't get me wrong, there are still some phenomenal players there, and you know, you talk about whether they can pull this all back around. They definitely can, because you know, you're the likes of your Patrick McElhenney's and your Chris Shields and your Michael Duffy's, Andy Boyle's, like there's phenomenal players there. But I don't think there was such a need to throw the water out.
The bathwater.
That's the one I'm looking for. Yeah, that was a poor attempt by me now to clear to get that one. There was no need to overreact. There really, really wasn't. Okay, they hadn't performed to the level that they were capable of the previous season. There was various different reasons for that. But I mean, like, you know, I challenge anybody to tell me that Sean Hoare isn't up there in the very, very best centre halves around. He's an absolute class act. So he is. And the same look can be applied to Gano and to so many of the players that were unfortunately allowed to get away from the club. And I would have found that particularly frustrating, because you lose your identity, Nathan. So you have to lose your identity to a certain extent. And I'm not, I think sometimes maybe there was a perception within the club that I was anti-foreigner. I wasn't. I absolutely wasn't anti-foreigner. And a couple of the signings that they've made are good lads, and their attitudes are excellent. And with a bit of time, I think they might acclimatise to the league. I just thought losing the heart and not the heart, because you still have Shieldsy and those kinds of boys, but you know, losing that Irishness out of the side. I mean, a guy like John Mountainy, for example, like what you see on for 90 minutes on Friday night out of John Mountainy is about 20% of what John Mountney contributes to Dundalk. He was a phenomenal presence around that dressing room. He's, you know, when you talk about 100%ers, there's a guy who was, you know, absolute 100%er. You never got anything less than maximum from him. And I would have, you know, tried to fight a guy like that's corner tooth and nail to try and explain, do you understand how much of a loss his presence? Like, he wasn't a guy who started every week. And I suppose that's why I'm saying there's more to him than just what you saw in 90 minutes. And losing guys out of a dressing room like that, it's a bigger loss than just 90 minutes on a football pitch.
There was obviously the situation with the goalkeepers leaving the club as well. There was a mix there that a huge amount of experience was lost. And you say it, probably ripping the heart out of the club in one way. We've seen in England the backlash against American owners, and maybe there seemed to be a lack of understanding. Like, there was obviously all sorts of rumours, which I know Vinnie Perth would deny, around influence when he was in charge. The people who were running the club, do you think they have a full understanding now of how Irish football works?
Yeah, they probably do now anyway, that's for sure. But look, again, it's a strange one, Nathan. Like, I'd have to say that personally I had a very good relationship with Bill. I found him, when I say that, I mean in that I found he was very straight in any of his dealings with me, any of the promises he made to me or any of the agreements we had or anything like that. He was also the kind of guy who you could have a disagreement with, you could have an argument with, and, you know, there's no grudges held 10 minutes later. He treats you exactly like he did before you had the disagreement. And so there are elements of Bill that you know, he's a good guy underneath it all. He is a good guy. He probably just needed a little bit more, you know, needed to take a little bit more information on board from those who would know Irish football inside out. That's probably the best way to put it, you know.
I presume the players were aware of this friction in the background.
I'd hope not, because then I'm not doing my job correctly. You know, no matter.
So is your job correctly to smile and get on with it and do everything behind closed doors? So if you're on the training ground, you're around the training ground, you just have to have a smile on your face and looking forward to the weekend, lads.
Well, I think my job is definitely not to cast doubt on the manager's ability around players. That's for sure. You know, if I put myself in Filippo's shoes, you know, and I found out that anybody, you know, in my staff was openly being negative around players around me, well, then obviously you're not going to be very happy with them, and you're going to be getting them out there ASAP, and rightly so. So look, again, maybe some people would say that's me not being strong enough. I don't know. People, you know, you can have different people take different angles on it. You know, I'm sure there are some people who would say that I needed to be stronger on it. But no, I would definitely like to think that I would think the players were reasonably surprised when I resigned. I would think they were reasonably surprised when I resigned. And look, I did, you know, I suppose two sides of it. One bit I probably never touched on in terms of the difficulty around the whole thing was, you know, when it was announced and when it was put out there that I was the manager, like, oh, geez, Nathan, the following 24 hours, I've never felt like such a fraud in my life. Like, my phone was hopping. Like, there was like close to 100 text messages coming in from people who wouldn't maybe be fully up to date with League of Ireland. I mean, people around my own locality. Yeah. Leash isn't exactly a hotbed for the League of Ireland, you know. And, you know, they're all texting you congratulations and texting you really, really nice messages and all of that kind of thing. And she can't text them back and explain it to them. And you can't say thanks, because then you're playing along with the perception. So you're just kind of leaving the messages hanging there and you're not really replying to people. And that was, you know, that was not a nice feeling over that kind of period of time. But I suppose the reason I bring that up in this context is, on the flip side, over the weekend after I resigned, you know, you did feel a hell of a lot better about yourself, and you did feel like you could, you know, you could kind of reasonably hold your head high when you've got, you know, when you've got Patrick McElhenney ringing you, Michael Duffy ringing you, guys like that ringing you, thanking you for your contribution. Nearly more important when you've got people in the office, an awful lot of people in the office, right from kind of front office to accounts to marketing to the various different roles, kind of, you know, ringing you and texting you saying, look, Shane, you know, we knew what was going on, and fair play for what you did put into the club. More so, being honest, more so off the field than on it, Nathan. You know, you kind of think, okay, well, you know, people seem to think that I did make a worthwhile contribution around here, but yeah.
Yeah, and look, that's here. That's something to take out of it, something really positive to take out of it as well. And it is a small industry, so you need to make sure you make those connections and leave them in a positive way. Did you know, did you have a sense that Filippo was also going to be leaving?
No.
Right.
And obviously, you know, you'd wonder, you know, how pivotal a cog was me going and him going, would he still be there if I was still there? And you know, or what had decisions been made around him? Other anyway, I don't know. I don't know really, to be honest with you. Yeah, look, it's that's not really for me to speculate on, really, to be honest with you. So it's not, I made my own decision based on my position. So I didn't. That was all I could do. I probably was a bit surprised when I saw what happened with him then very quickly afterwards.
Do you regret going in with Dundalk?
Absolutely not. Not in a million years, no. Last year was an incredible experience, absolutely incredible experience, as I say, when most of the rest of the population were having zero experiences, I was having one of the experiences of my life. Some of the people that I encountered in the club, I mean, that's, you know, it's very, very easy to see why they had the success that they've had in the past, Nathan. You know, there's, I know Gary is gone from it there now as well, but the likes of Gary Rogers, Brian Gartland, I mean, what a guy, you know, Shieldsy, Fats, Michael Duffy, there's incredible people, and even the people before that, you know, with Vinny and Giller and people like that. So, and by the way, they also had the best medical department in the country. There's some fantastic people involved there. And I suppose, being selfish above all else, Nathan, you know, I'm kind of concentrating on the small ball now for the next few months, but there is a want to eventually end up back potentially in League of Ireland management. And I genuinely believe if I went back in League of Ireland management, and as I say, that's possibly at middle to bottom half of the first division. Look, I've done it once, I'd do it again if I had to, and try and build it from there. But when I go back, if and when I go back into League of Ireland management, I'll go back in a better manager for the experiences that I've had. Just watching how players carry themselves, you know, those big name players, watching how, you know, obviously watching, being in, around training sessions, being around a setup like that, you're going to be learning all the time. And I think it's equipped me a hell of a lot better for if or when the next gig potentially comes up, you know.
It does show a big issue though for managers, coaches within Irish football. And we've touched on this, and we keep threatening to do a longer piece on the pro license and how few people there are in this country who have the pro license, particularly people who weren't professional players, who didn't come through from the international team. And actually then how few jobs there are for people who hold such a high qualification, such a difficult qualification to get, that in a way you have to sort of suffer through the last few months because, as you say, it's your full-time job. It's not like being in the Premier League where a manager would probably throw their toys out of the pram and say, I'm done with this, and you'll get another job somewhere quite quickly down the line if you're in that circle. In Ireland, if you're a pro licence holder, like, there's no guarantees that you get another job in the League of Ireland. There's no guarantees you get a full-time paying job anywhere right now.
Yeah, we just have no industry here, I suppose. That's probably the best way of putting it. And to be fair, Nathan, like, there were people who had a kind of a swipe kind of indirectly at me for taking on the role, and therefore, you know, allowing Dundalk to tick the box that allowed Filippo to do the job even though he wasn't a pro license holder. And I get that. I completely get that. But on the flip side, like, I started my coaching badges when I was 19, and by 28 I had my pro license. I can tell you, no club, not one club ever paid for one of my registrations or one of my licenses. I paid for every single one of them the whole way up. It cost me probably 12 grand over the course of those 10 years. You kind of feel within your right to put yourself in a position where you're able to make a bit of a living for yourself on the back of that, even if it's not quite what it says on the tin. But I do get the gripe at the same time, because it's so hard to get to that level. You know, you really wish you had your industry of whatever it is, four divisions of, you know, ranging from professional to semi-professional clubs, where you've got managers, assistant managers, and coaches. You know, if you've got 40 clubs operating in your country and three kind of fully paid gigs at all of them, now you've got a proper industry going there. But look, we're a million miles away from that, unfortunately.
All our football coverage here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. Shane Keegan is with us. It's still Arsenal 0, Villarreal 0. So Villarreal 2-1 up on aggregate at the Emirates. There's 15 minutes remaining in that one. And it's now 2-2 between Roma and Manchester United on the night. Edinson Cavani scored both the goals for United, who were 1-0 up, went 2-1 down, and now back level at 2-2. So that makes it 8-4 on aggregate to Manchester United. They're through to the final. Arsenal need a goal. At this Arsenal side, Shane, not very good at all, it turns out.
how did we not take something from them, Nate?
Come on! They're not though, are they? Like it feels as though they've stalled. It does feel as though they've stalled.
Yeah, it does. In fairness, they never really got momentum for them, did it? And it's just, you know, with no UEFA Cup, if there's no Europa League final for them, it's just been such a disappointing year really for them. They've never been remotely close to the Champions League positions really. And you know, for a guy who was working under Pep Guardiola and you were expecting such a strong identity, you know, you look at Arsenal and you just really don't know what you're going to see from them on any given week. Now look, when you're standing on the sideline and you're up close to them, they look like absolute world beaters. But look, at the level they're operating at, they're way off the mark, aren't they, at the moment?
Yeah, when you're on that sideline and probably the most beautiful playing surface in the Premier League, is it just that thing everybody says about the difference in quality? It's just the speed of them? Everything's that little bit quicker?
Yeah. It's ping, ping, ping. You can't get near them. You really, really can't. Every touch is perfect, and the crispness of everything that they're doing. Now, to be fair, our lads at the time equipped ourselves reasonably well against them, so they did. But you're looking at players who are number 24, 25, 26 in an Arsenal panel, and they'd certainly be in the top three or four players if they're in the League of Ireland, that's for sure, you know.
Ooh, inches away from going in front. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, a header from 8 yards out, did the right thing, headed down into the ground, comes off the left-hand post, almost goes in off the back of the keeper, but Villarreal just about do enough to survive. So Arsenal really pushing for a goal. Shane, now that you're available again, we're going to be talking to you a lot more, I'm sure, over the coming weeks, and we'll get your opinion on everything League of Ireland and grassroots, because we had a really good conversation a few months back with Dr. Laura Finnegan as well when we were doing our Future of Sport series, and we'd Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, on talking about a lot of things around the future of sport that I know you're interested in, all of them, not just League of Ireland, but also around PE in school. So we'll dedicate a bit of time to that over the coming weeks and months. But you are back managing. Is it small ball? Is it medium-sized ball? What is it? Football, hurling?
Oh, we'd call it the small ball around here, all right, Nathan.
So you're managing Rat Downey?
Yeah. I've taken over our own senior hurlers for this year with a few very close friends of mine, which is great to have such a tight knit management group. But nah, look, I'd always have had a massive love and interest for hurling, and it just seemed like a good year to have a crack at it. And there's kind of a real buzz around the place. Obviously, we're allowed back into the field this coming week, so can't wait to get going.
And are you the manager?
Yeah. Well, I'm gone in. There's. I suppose we went in as joint. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Sorry. The joke went straight over there. So joint managers. Jesus, getting confusing again. Joint managers. Just take the gig, all right, and pick the team. Take some responsibility. Come on.
Hopefully this one won't be quite as confusing.
No doubt. Shane, great to talk to you as always. Listen, thanks for coming on. Thanks for being so honest, and we'll chat to you over the next few weeks.
Cheers, Ned.
Shane Keegan there talking about his time at Dundalk. So 10 minutes left, still Arsenal 0, Villarreal 0, as I say, Manchester United cruising towards the Europa League final.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise, the Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome back. It is the football show on Off the Ball. Nathan with you this evening. We're in the closing stages of the Europa League semi-final second leg. Manchester United 2-2 on the night with Roma. They are 8-4 up on aggregate. But will it be Arsenal or Villarreal they play in the final? Arsenal pushing and pushing now to get what would be a winner. They're trailing 2-1 on aggregate at the Emirates, but it's 0-0 on the night, so one goal would be enough for Arsenal to progress on away goals. They've had chances. They hit the post just a couple of minutes ago through Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Football writer John Brune is on the line. Evening, John.
Evening, Nathan. How are you?
I'm all right. We're so close to four English teams in all the European finals and all those brilliant 5,000-word pieces you can write about English football's dominance returning.
Yes. does it not say that the rest of Europe might be struggling rather than English football flourishing? Could it be about money?
No, certainly not.
I mean, this happened a couple of years ago, didn't it? And even as a very proud Englishman, obviously, I didn't much enjoy two English teams in two finals. It didn't really do it for me. And my recollection of those games is that neither of them, Chelsea-Arsenal in Baku and Liverpool-Tottenham in Madrid, neither of them were particularly good games, were they? So I think there's something to be said for two nationalities or two countries in a final.
It's hard to see how an Arsenal-Manchester United Europa League final would be a good game. It's hard to see any game that Arsenal would be involved in would be a good game. They are without question, the dullest team in the Premier League right now. Is there another contender?
I chuck Wolves into that. Yeah.
Ever since Matt Doherty went.
Yeah, well, that was exactly what I was thinking of. Yes, Nathan. No, I think they're built in the image of their manager, who I think is a good manager, but has it limits his thoughts. Let's put it that way. He doesn't exert the team and. Wolves, I imagine, I've done a bit of covering them. It's pretty difficult because there isn't a lot happening there. But I understand what you mean by Arsenal. Something about Arsenal, I mean, even during the end of the Arsene Wenger era, they were quite boring because it was the same thing that happened every season, wasn't it? And this appears to be a similar pattern in which they got to a final a couple of years ago, but they did have a habit of losing semi-finals under Arsene Wenger and... Never really. I mean, they've had a poor season in the Premier League. I watching the game just before, Freddie Ljungberg was talking about how maybe Arsenal fans miss Arsene Wenger, and I'm sure that's the case. But I think it's not that Arsene Wenger towards the end of the time they miss. It's the one of 1998, isn't it? And if you recall how exciting a team that was, and then you look at Arsenal now, very different club, different stadium, very different owners. It's difficult, and you know, Mikel Arteta, if they do lose this game and go out, will come under more criticism. But I can't really see what they're going to do if they change the manager again. I think he needs to be given time.
In the wake of the fallout from the European Super League, I was wondering if there's a possibility that any of these owners try and buy back the love of the supporters. If some of them will go and say, you know what, maybe this is the summer we spend 200 million. Is there a chance that Stan Kroenke says, well, listen, we need the investment. Why not go and try and buy one or two of these superstars? That FSG say, you know, if we sign Kylian Mbappe for 200 million, well, actually, these Liverpool supporters will probably forget everything that went on. Is that a possibility?
I think there's two factors there. One of them is that I think maybe the relationship of in particular the Glazer family with Manchester United and the Kroenke family with Arsenal fans is probably a bit too far gone for them to be bought off. And also, where are they going to get the money from? Because if the Super League was nothing else, it was an attempt for those clubs, and in particular Real Madrid and Barcelona, to refinance themselves, because the word that I receive, and you know, even if you drill a little bit underneath their figures, is they've spent up. They're at the limit. That's why they were looking for more money. And, you know, if you're a Manchester United fan out there and you're thinking that the club's going to go out and buy, you know, Jadon Sancho, Kylian Mbappe, whatever, I think you've got another thing coming. I can't see that being something that's going to happen this summer. And Arsenal, that's not been the case for quite a long time, and I don't see the Kroenkes turning on the taps, to be quite honest with you.
Once we get to the end of this season, eventually, we will head to Euro 2020, and poor old Gareth Southgate, those expectation levels are starting to rise bit by bit. We've gone from a situation probably a year ago, if it had gone ahead in Euro 2020, where England's front three would probably have picked itself, where it's Sterling, Rashford and Kane are your front three.
Yes.
Are Rashford and Sterling on the way out with Foden coming in and Mason Mount finding a way into the side? Or is Gareth Southgate going to stick with the tried and trusted, or does he give these young players a chance?
I think he's a man for the tried and trusted. You know, that would seem to be his outward look. Rashford hasn't had an easy time of it recently. He's carrying an injury. Though he's probably had a far better season than Raheem Sterling, I have to say, who amid Manchester City's triumphs has rather disappeared. And with Harry Kane, well, Harry Kane will start. He's the captain. There's no doubt about that. Harry Kane essentially will play even if he's got only one leg left. So, and, you know, no one's really going to stop him. But yeah, I think possibly the point you're driving at is that there are a wealth of options for Gareth Southgate, such that I don't know if I dare mention his name to you over
there. We're over it.
Jack Grealish, yes. I don't think he's going to get on the plane, mostly because he's injured, and I really see that he's going to have long enough to prove himself. And you know that there is a World Cup in just 18 months. His time might come at that point. But is there a need for someone like Jack Grealish when you've got a player of the quality of Phil Foden? Who it's funny you should call me tonight, but I put in my vote for the Football Writers in England's Player of the Year. Mine went to Foden. I mean, he is just a kid, but he's the player I've enjoyed watching most this season.
Well, what about Ruben Dias, who has transformed this Manchester City side into one of the great defensive units we've seen?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Ruben Dias would have been up there, and I think, you know, Gundogan as well in there.
He's just not English enough for you.
I think that might be the case, you know. I mean...
At least you're admitting it.
Well, I'm trying to think who I voted for over the years. I mean, I voted for Jamie Vardy when he won it over Riyad Mahrez. I'm not sure that was the right decision.
If you voted for James Milner the year Van Dijk won it, we'd know there was an issue. But if you didn't do that, it's all fine. What are the hype levels like around Foden? Because, again, you know, reading online over the last couple of nights, there's a lot of talk. He's, you know, he's the best English talent since Gazza.
Well, I think he's possibly the best English talent since someone that we've forgotten about a bit these days, because he's managing a club that might go down from the Championship, and that's Wayne Rooney. Because I don't think he's on Wayne Rooney levels of hype just yet, because that really did get very silly. And such that Wayne Rooney's career statistically was absolutely phenomenal, really, but we still think that he probably wasn't as good as he could be. But Foden's a slightly different player, of course, and there is, and he's, I don't know, what can we expect from Phil Foden? I suppose, from an English point of view, if the England team is your thing, you want the England team to be built around him. And one problem with that is that as Englishmen or English managers, I've always had a problem building teams around players of such creative talent. Gascoigne is among the last, really. I mean, in the 80s, Glenn Hoddle never really got given that role. You might say Paul Scholes famously shunted to the left.
Gerrard and Lampard couldn't play together. John, unfortunately, we are incredibly tight on time tonight. I feel bad. I feel rude that we only brought you on for a few minutes. But I think we got your Phil Foden for Football Writers Player of the Year in spite of the brilliance of Ruben Dias. And listen, that's enough for us. We'll get you on again soon, John, and we'll have a proper chat. Thanks.
Yeah,
really.
Great to talk to you. Cheers.
John Bruin there from The Guardian. Short and sweet, unfortunately. We're going to take a quick break, but it looks as though Arsenal are heading out of the Europa League. 2 minutes of injury time left.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.